A major breakthrough in a Fremantle harbour death, the man who groomed a 14-year-old girl over Snapchat, and Harry and Meghan's Netflix doco drops. It's Friday, the 9th of December.
The West Live with Matt Tinney and Ben O'Shea.
G'day, Matty.
G'day, mate. A big day of news to finish off this Friday.
Absolutely. No, anybody thinking that they were just going to ease their way into the weekend? No, not the case. A huge day of news. And let's start with this story. Locals were shocked early Sunday morning when they made the grisly discovery of a woman's body in the waters of Fremantle Harbour. And now, Matty, you've got some breaking news for us.
Yes, a 21-year-old man has been charged with murder now over the death of this 25-year-old woman who was found in the fishing boat harbour. Locals called authorities. An investigation began. The police initially said it might be a bit difficult because of water washing away potential clues, but a breakthrough this morning, a 21-year-old man has been charged with murder and he's due to appear in Armidale Magistrates Court today.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see some more details on that story. And now this next one is truly harrowing. An Eastern States predator groomed a teenage girl in Geraldton for months over Snapchat before flying to WA and repeatedly raping her, including at knife point, at a derelict Midwest hotel. So the horrifying details of the 14-year-old's two-day ordeal in the Geraldton hellhole were revealed during the trial of James Robert Spresny, who was found guilty on two counts of rape on Thursday in the Geraldton District Court. So Spresny was 19 years old when he started grooming this Geraldton girl, who at the time was only 13, and it was happening over Snapchat. He flew to WA from Victoria in June last year. He lied on his G2G pass, saying that he was visiting a relative. And then after quarantining for 2 weeks, he took a bus to Geraldton to meet the girl, who had turned 14, face-to-face. The pair were at this abandoned hotel in the Midwest, and a frantic online campaign was unfolding by the girl's family to try and get Spresny to let her go. It eventually led police to finding them and rescuing the girl in quite dramatic fashion. The jury deliberated for just over 2 hours before finding Spresny guilty, and after the trial, the judge revealed that he'd been on bail at the time of the offences for similar crimes in Victoria.
Oh, harrowing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And just the lengths that he has gone to, obviously grooming for months on Snapchat, and then flying in, lying on the G2G pass, quarantining for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
A just harrowing ordeal for this 14-year-old girl and her family.
Yeah, absolutely. And a reminder to all parents, just really try and keep an eye on what your kids are doing on social media. It's very, very easy for these types of things to happen. And now, just when you thought the Brittany Higgins saga couldn't become any more of a farce, the chief prosecutor in the trial of Bruce Lehrman has complained that police officers in the ACT engaged in a very clear campaign to pressure him not to prosecute the alleged rape of Brittany Higgins. And he said that there was inappropriate interference, and he felt that investigators had clearly aligned themselves with the successful defence. So Bruce Lehrman's side. And now the police union has hit back in the ACT at what it calls smears against investigators and has thrown its full support behind calls for a judicial inquiry into how the case was handled. But they've said that that also must include the conduct of the Director of Public Prosecution. Lehrman, of course, has pleaded not guilty to one count of sexual intercourse without consent. And that trial collapsed in October due to a juror misconduct. And he's consistently maintained his innocence, won't get a chance to prove it in court because the trial was dropped entirely after concerns over Brittany Higgins' mental health.
Yeah, and what's interesting is if this goes to a civil trial and then we have him speaking and then Brittany Higgins has already said she is prepared to, you know, speak at that as well. So there's still more to come on this. I don't think it's over yet.
It's a bit of a mess. It honestly is a bit of a mess. And you just wonder what impact it has on victims of sexual abuse, right? And their willingness to come forward. And now, if I try hard enough, I can remember a time when the railway markets existed in Subiaco. I think there was an excellent Indian place in the food court from memory. It seems like a long time ago. It sat empty for years. But now we can finally get a look at what's been built in its place.
Yeah, so this is the old Pavilion Market, like 15 years it's been gone for. And now 500 residents are moving into One Subiaco. This is a luxury resort-style apartment complex. It's promising to revive Subi. Back to the good old days. So you would think an influx of 500 people would result in more cafes, shops opening, restaurants, etc. So it might be like it was, you know, circa 2008 or thereabouts, you know, when Subi was thriving. I just picked that year because I remember going out that year.
he had a big night at the Red Sea.
So it's fascinating to see how much these apartments are fetching. Like, we're talking roughly between $1 to $2 million.
Whoa.
But there's two penthouses, and one of them has been held just to garner market interest. $4.5 million with views from the city to City Beach. The interesting part about this is they're going to put a market again on the ground floor, and they're going to use some of the heritage signage in there. So that's a nice touch.
Yeah, well, I like the idea. And you know, there was a penthouse that has already sold, $19.3 million.
That's crazy, isn't
views
it?
Out to Rotto.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah.
It looks nice. Like, it looks like the place you would go to for a holiday.
It does look very nice. I hope I know someone who buys an apartment there so I can come visit.
But this is kind of downsizing in the western suburbs. You know, people sell their house, they don't want the maintenance, they want to go and live in a resort-style complex, lock it up, leave, go to Europe for the European summer. That sort of, like, you know, lifestyles of the rich and the famous.
Yeah, exactly. If only. And for the rest of us, we have to worry about things like power bills. And we spoke on the show yesterday that Albo was desperate to get a deal done with state and territory leaders over his plan to lower power bills for Australia. And the cornerstone of that plan is this cap on coal prices at $125 a tonne, less than half the market rate. But this will involve paying compensation of billions of dollars to the major coal producing states, New South Wales and Queensland. Well, National Cabinet is going to happen today. All of the leaders and Albo are going to Zoom call. Do they Zoom? Do they use Microsoft Teams? Whatever they do, they have some other software that we don't know about. So they're going to dial in remotely because, of course, Albo was diagnosed with COVID at the start of this week. And they're going to try and come to some agreement. And it comes as yesterday the energy ministers of Australia all met and they agreed in principle to this landmark deal, also involving renewable energy to assure there's enough supply in the national electricity grid. I don't know. We'll see. If Albo comes out of it with an agreement, I think it's a massive win.
Yeah.
Massive win for the new Labor Prime Minister. And now, have you seen this story, Maddie? So, speaking at the White House overnight, US President Joe Biden has formally announced the release of WNBA star Brittany Griner from detention in Russia in what will go down as one of the most uneven prisoner swaps in history.
This is not a basketballer for a basketballer.
No. No, I don't know if there's any Russian basketballers in prison. So, but you know that it's a classic prisoner swap thing, right? Mm. So where they meet on the tarmac of an airport, and that one
is yours, ours,
and they literally cross over on the tarmac, and then they take their person and off they go. That kind of a thing. Well, Brittany Griner was sentenced to a Russian penal colony for possession of a single gram of cannabis oil around about the time of the Ukraine invasion by Russia. So that was kind of a big news story, and there's been a lot of pressure on Biden to get her release. Well, the US got her back, and in return, Russia got Viktor Boot. And now, if you don't know of him, he's allegedly the most prolific arms dealer of the past few decades, fueled conflicts in Africa and beyond, and more specifically, he was convicted in a US court of plotting to kill Americans. Mm. And now, you remember the Nicolas Cage movie Lord of War from a few years ago? Well, it was about a despicable arms dealer. Well, that was based on the life of Viktor Boot, who has the charming nickname the Merchant of Death. So, on one hand, you've got this WNBA player who had some cannabis oil and was, you know, in prison for, a couple of months. And then she's been swapped
for the Merchant of Death.
The Merchant of Death.
Could they not find somebody else?
Someone in
another
between?
Russian?
Well, the thing is, the Russians knew that they had Biden over a barrel because there's been this mounting public pressure to get Griner out. And so that's how they managed to secure the release of Boot, who's, for various reasons, pretty important to Moscow. But now, unfortunately for Biden, everybody in America is bagging him out.
Yeah.
He got ripped off in the swap.
You think they'd be paying a close eye on Viktor Boot now, wouldn't you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Seeing whether they can... I mean, how would they ever get... If he's living in Russia, it's not like Russia's going to turn him in.
Yeah,
if he does anything else.
No, they love him. They love him over there.
Yeah.
So, because I think he helps their interests overseas, because instead of them having to directly negotiate with some of these African countries,
he just does it
on their behalf. So, pretty dodgy. Mm. Talking about dodgy, so the ongoing story of public protests in Iran has taken a disturbing new twist. Medics in that country are now accusing Iranian security forces of targeting women specifically at anti-regime protests with shotgun fire to their faces and genitals. Photos have been supplied to media outlets in the West, depicting these wounds all over the women protesters' bodies with so-called birdshot pellets fired from shotguns, which the security forces have been firing at close range at the protesters. It's just really quite disgusting. And one doctor said that he believed the authorities were targeting men and women in different ways because they wanted to, and his quote was, destroy the beauty of these women.
This is just awful, isn't it? It just makes you go, how is this going on in the world?
I know, right?
And how do we fix it?
Sport.
And now, if you thought the drama around David Warner was over, that after he withdrew his challenge to the leadership ban. Oh, are you kidding? David Warner, he's never far from the drama. So now his manager has claimed that Australian cricket players were given permission to ball tamper by Cricket Australia officials back in 2016. That was 16 months before Sandpapergate. Do you buy that?
I don't buy. We'll come out with specific names.
Yeah, I know.
Who gave this permission?
I know. It's a bit of a fishy thing, if you ask me.
Warner, and why are we hearing about it now?
I know, right? I know. Warner managed to score 21 from 29 balls against the West Indies, if you're interested in what he was actually doing on the cricket pitch. He hit three boundaries in one over before being caught in the first session of the match against the Windies in Adelaide. And now, World Cup news for you, Matty. So Croatia take on Brazil tonight. The Netherlands take on Argentina in the early hours of tomorrow morning. But there's more controversy in Qatar. So there was a death of another migrant worker during the group stages of the tournament, and as if that wasn't bad enough, the chief executive of the Qatar World Cup was asked about the worker's death, and this was his comment. He said, "Death is a natural part of life."
Do we know why the migrant worker died?
Oh, I think like probably heat stress or getting things like that. But how about that?
Oh God,
like jeez.
Well, this is the thing over there. These migrant workers are just seen like spark plugs,
completely
plug them in,
expendable,
plug them out.
Completely expendable. Just quite disgusting.
The Wild West.
All right, now, so we need to talk about Meghan and Harry. Their doco has dropped on Netflix. The first three episodes have come out.
Did you watch them?
No, I have not watched them, but I've been doing a lot of reading about it. And let's have a little bit of a listen.
So much of what Meghan is and how she is so similar to my mum.
It's pretty...
Sorry.
It's pretty cringeworthy, isn't it? If you're basing a sexual relationship on how similar someone is to your mum...
It's a bit Freudian.
Very Freudian. Also, are you surprised that some member of the royal family is like... Has some mummy issues?
Would you ever compare a partner to your mum?
No.
Like...
You might have... Other people might do it. Like, you know, the third parties might say, do you know what? Matty hasn't realised, but, you know, his new partner is exactly like his mum. You know, but you don't do it yourself.
I think it's more about repairing the image and trying to align Meghan with the much-loved Princess Diana.
Yeah, and so this is what it's all about. It's massaging their image. They say it's about putting their side of the story across, but, you know, like, and they say, the producers say that, you know, the royal family was approached and they didn't want to be a part of it. The royal family has actually pushed back on that and said, well, that's not true at all.
But the thing is, the Buckingham Palace and Kensington Palace aren't commenting. It's all being done through these kind of royal correspondents.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, but you know what the interesting thing is about this first three episodes? So Harry has addressed the Nazi outfit.
Remember that?
Which is crazy, right? Because he had to, because if you're going to accuse the royal family of racism, and it's like, hang on, mate, you went to a fancy dress party as a Nazi.
Yeah.
And now we got to talk about Celine Dion.
Oh, yeah. What a voice.
Amazing voice. One of the greatest singers of our era. And it's been revealed that she's been diagnosed with a horrifying terminal neurological disease.
Yeah,
stiff person syndrome.
I've been Googling this because I've never heard of it. No. So what happens is it causes spasms, and after diagnosis, people tend to have a lifespan somewhere between 6 and 28 years. Mm. So the doctors have been working on this. I take it you saw her video. I just found it incredibly sad. Just a woman who was obviously at the peak for so long, unable to go out there and perform and do what she loves to do. And she's obviously been grappling with this privately for a long time, and she's had to go public with it because of having to cancel her shows in Europe. So she's rescheduled them from next year to 2024. But at the end of her video message, I very much got the sense from kind of her grim face that perhaps even she doesn't know if that's going to be a possibility.
It's pretty sad stuff. And you know, like, you always have to remember that a lot of people in the community are going through sad stuff all the time. It's not any more sad because she's a celebrity and a superstar, but it's a reminder for us of the things that people are going through.
Oh, totally. I think as well, she just seems to be such a genuine person and a nice person. That was what struck me about this video, was you could just feel like she was just talking to you, and she was before those days of, you know, when, you know, singers behaving badly and all that sort of thing. She was just about the voice. She had an amazing voice, and that was
incredible.
Need anything else.
So we'll make the most of the time.
Hopefully she can recover. Amazing if she got back on stage.
And that's your news from the West Australian for Friday, December 9. Don't forget to subscribe to The West Live on your favourite podcast player. Matty, well, let's talk Monday.
Will do. Cheers, mate.
You've been listening to The West Live with Matt Tinney and Ben O'Shea.